Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. It looks like our music's not going to start up playing, so I guess we're not using it today. My name is Lynn, and I'm excited to have with us today a very special guest. But before I get to her, I just want to remind you of a couple of upcoming shows. Next week, which is February 16th on Tuesday at 11 a.m., we're going to have our monthly meditation. And on February 23rd at 11 a.m., we're going to be having Susan Scalora as a guest on here talking about her book, Presence of Angels. And if you've not had the opportunity to see her book, it's a fabulous book, and you can check her out at www.myth.com. But today, I have invited Susie Ward to talk with us. And Susie is a fantastic author, and she's a different type of author. Susie had the misfortune of losing her son in an accident, and about 14 years after that started communicating with him, and he began telling her about heaven. She started asking questions, and he was talking to her. I was introduced to Susie through a friend who was telling me about Matthew's messages that she was reading off the internet, and happened to be in a bookstore on vacation one day, and the book Matthew, Tell Me About Heaven basically jumped off the shelf at me. I read it, I loved it, and contacted Susie, and she was gracious enough to come on the show today. So welcome to the show today, Susie.
Thank you, Lynn. It's an honor for me to be with you today.
Oh, well, it's a blessing to all of us, I am sure. So I'm glad that you're here. Susie, I know that because I had a friend of mine call me this afternoon thinking she had missed the show. We changed the timing of the show, and she was afraid she had missed it, and she wanted to know about it on her ride home from work. But she was very curious a little bit about you. Can you tell us, like, how this all started and, you know, what it was like for you to start communicating with Matthew?
Oh, yes, of course. Right after Matthew's fatal vehicle accident in April of 1980, I was fortunate in having a very fine psychic medium as a dear friend at that time. And she said that he would be sending me a signal when he was ready to start sending messages through other psychic mediums to me. And he did that in a dream that was unmistakable about 9 months later. And again, I had the good fortune of being led to three different mediums who did not know each other. They lived in three different states. And in addition to giving me progressive messages that he was telling them about how he was doing, and also several things that only I could know that let me know, oh, you know, definitely that is Matthew telling these mediums that not only is he fine, but he is with me. But the thing is, all of them told me that when the time was right, he and I would speak directly, telepathically. It was almost 14 years later, in January of 1994, when that happened. I always hoped through those years that it would happen, but at that time, I considered telepathic communication as such a rare gift, and that so few people had it, that I really didn't feel that I was worthy of it. I know better now. Every one of us has this capacity. We just don't know it, or it hasn't opened yet. But at any rate, with me, somebody suggested that if I would write a short note to Matthew every morning, just, you know, something casual like, hi, dear, you know, I'd love to hear from you. What are you doing? That sort of thing. That at some point, I would receive thoughts that I knew were not my own. It almost like a railroad track, parallel thoughts where the lower one, that's the sensation I had. The lower ones were my thoughts about what I was writing to him. And then the higher parallel track would be thoughts I knew weren't mine. And it was the third or fourth morning when I heard, Mother, this is Matthew. It's really Matthew. Write what I'm telling you. And from then on, we spent at least an hour every day. And they were just full-blown conversations. I was absolutely, it was mind-boggling. Because everything he was telling me was so different from what I had been taught in my 35 years immersed in Christian churches. But that is how it started. And that was 16 years ago. The result of our conversations has produced four books. And when the last one was published in 2003, I expanded my website because I was told Matthew is going to it was God who told me Matthew will continue sending you messages and post them because they will have such wide distribution. So there are about 90-some messages on my website by now. And not all from Matthew. Most of the messages are. But Matthew introduced me to many, many other highly evolved beings, some of them in spirit form, some of them in powerful, highly advanced civilizations. And they also gave me messages for the books. So it's quite a collection of fascinating information, Lynn.
That's incredible. And I want to just mention that your website is www.matthewbooks.com. And people can check out your books and also see Matthew's messages through that website. Is that correct, Susie?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah, because the monthly messages are incredible. I find them to be fascinating, and they cover such a broad range of topics. It's about a lot of things. But when you first started talking with Matthew, you had a lot of questions about heaven, and that when I was reading the book, it was I have to say I wasn't overly surprised. It kind of went more in tune with what I felt was right, like it vibrated true. So even when I was reading something that I hadn't necessarily heard before, it didn't sound unfamiliar. But can you tell our listeners a little bit about his description of heaven and just what it's like to cross over and just some of the conversations you had with him about that?
Oh, yes, Lynn, I'll be happy to. All right. Heaven, he told me the correct, or the proper name is the term he used, the proper name of the world that we call heaven is Nirvana. And I told him, Matthew, that's the name of a band, and it has something to do with a religion, that another religion, I'm not even sure which one, and I don't know anything about it, but at any rate, you know, that just can't be so. It was our first argument, and I'll tell you, it was just like having my son back again at my side. You know, having this little argument about the mother saying, essentially, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. But at any rate, I have heard since from other sources that is the correct name. And there are, really, religions do not teach us, and I can understand that. They don't teach us what heaven is. It is a multi-layered realm that accommodates everything that we think of as the absolute most wondrous place in the world, where we go after our physical lives end. And it goes all the way down to what religions teach hell is. These layers are interconnected in the sense that at the time we die, our lifetime energy automatically takes us to the lair where we need to be. And light, which is the most powerful energy in the universe, and it's the light and love are the very same energy, just expressed differently. So there is no judgment. The soul simply goes to the proper layer, and if it is one of the lower ones, then always that layer provides the kinds of experiences that we need to spiritually evolve. So I think that that's one thing. Well, it certainly is one thing that just startled me. Really, everything he told me startled me. It is not our permanent resting place. It is simply the lifetime in spirit before we choose our next lifetime in a body. And it's not necessarily back on Earth. It depends on how far we have evolved spiritually, because we can move on to another civilization in a different world and have new experiences that keep us growing. So that was another thing that was so startling to me. And Lynn, kudos to you for flowing with that information. Even though it may have been new to you, it flowed. It confirmed what you knew at soul level. I'm afraid I was still back in the teachings of the church, sort of a late bloomer, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, I have to say I was fortunate enough to always be a rebel with my church, so it was much easier. And I was always seeking. Like, I could never quite grasp that it was complete truth, what I was learning as I was growing up in the church. So, you know, I've always been more open to this. And reading the book, reading that first book, Matthew, Tell Me About Heaven, it resonated, you know, like in a way that hadn't before. So, yeah, I think it was easier for me than some to read. But I wanted to just clarify, because you were saying that we go to different levels. And so it sounds like what you're saying is that our idea of heaven and the world idea of hell can be in the same place. They're just on different layers?
They are. The bottom is not the lowest or basest and densest energy. Is actually a tiny, tiny orb that isn't one of the layers. Even there, the light is constantly beamed to the souls who are there. And as they absorb the light, they automatically move up to the lowest layer of the flexible part of nirvana. Those souls are the ones that... we often associate Hitler with the most evil persons who ever lived. Idi Amin is another. And those souls have only, I mean, while they're here on earth, they have only that spark of light that is viability. They have that connection with Creator, because every soul is the ingredient of every soul, if I can use that word in quotes, ingredient, is love, light, the essence of Creator. It is the life force of everything that exists, not only in the cosmos, which has many universes, but in this universe. And consequently, it what we consider the ultimate in power and awareness and omniscience, whom some of us call God, God is really lower in the spiritual hierarchy than Creator. And of course, that was another thing that just was mind blowing to me.
Okay, that's a mind blowing concept right there. I'm sure.
Yes.
just to stay with that. So, does like with people that commit suicide, do they automatically go to that lower echelon? How does that work? I mean, because we think of suicide as unredeemable.
It is not unredeemable, and no, they do not go to that lowest flexible layer. Their lifetime energy, just like everyone else's, is what draws them to the proper layer of nirvana that is in consonance with how they lived their entire lifetime. It's really the law of physics, because there is no difference in science and spirit. And they are not condemned in any way at all. There are many reasons that people take their own lives. And it can be that they have been so pushed to the edge of their emotions that they no longer are in control of what they do. They have reached the point of desperation where common sense and reason no longer even enter into their thoughts. And there is no punishment whatsoever. And when those souls arrive, they go to a portal where they are received by, all souls are received by souls in nirvana who greet them, and those whose souls, whose psyches are traumatized either by the lifetime they led or the circumstances of their death, are treated most tenderly with personalized care. There is a special area, like a really, I guess you could call it a medical ward, where other souls are constantly in attention. Those wards, the treatments that they receive are tones, beautiful melodic tones, and pastel colored lights. Everything is so, so gentle. And their psyches are healed. And afterwards, they join the rest of the souls in nirvana. They realize that they have returned, and they are with other souls whom they have known, not only in this earth lifetime, but other lifetimes, either on earth, but physical lifetimes, wherever. And they understand that there is no punishment, but that they did not complete their soul contracts. So they are given the opportunities to grow while they are there in their spirit world, to either grow stronger definitely stronger, so that they won't repeat that in another lifetime. Because the purpose of every lifetime and the goal of every soul is to grow spiritually. And balancing, an emotional balance. It includes forgiveness of self, spiritual awareness of blessings. It is understanding that our soul contracts are part, the individual soul contracts are part of a pre-birth agreement made by all souls who want to share a lifetime. These agreements are made in unconditional love by all of the major participants, and they are designed for the spiritual growth of all. Now, that does mean that some souls have to agree, and they do so willingly, to play the heavies, to really cause problems and suffering for the others, because that is what they need to bring balance to other lifetimes, so that they overall have balanced experience and can move on to higher levels. So we don't know our own soul contracts, much less anyone else's. So that's why we are told, do not judge others. Try to have understanding. Try to see the situation at hand from another perspective, the perspective that the others do. It never means having to condone activities that cause suffering to others, whether it's just in a personal situation or a widespread situation, like whole nations who are living under a tyrannical ruler. But try to separate the actions or the activities from the person, because at soul level, each of us is a part of God, and in the higher hierarchy, a part of Creator. And because of this inseparability, we grow as an entire oneness of all by how much light each of us contributes to that. I'm sorry, Lynn. I'm sure I digressed there.
Oh, no, but I think, you know, because that kind of moved into more about, you know, being not judging, you know, I mean, and that he talks about that in his messages about, you know, not being judgmental. And, you know, I got that in the book, too, that in Nirvana there's no judgment. It's just compassion and caring and that constant drawing, trying to, you know, that beaming of light to get, you know, the soul to understand it can move into that light more. And that's really what we're trying to replicate here on Earth.
It is. Absolutely, it is. Matthew has said, heaven and hell are right there on Earth. It is what each soul creates for his own lifetime, and collectively, the collective consciousness is what creates heaven and hell throughout the whole world.
Right.
I know that's sort of a really difficult concept to embrace, and also it seems, or it might seem to indicate that, well, what does it matter then, whether you live a good life or you live a life that, in our concept of what is good and what is evil, that the people who are evil, you know, they get the same good reward that others do because they go to Nirvana. No, that isn't how it goes. After that lightning fast transition from a physical lifetime to a lifetime in spirit, as I said, each soul is drawn by the lifetime energy registration to the area that is in consonance with that. And there is no judgment from God or any other source, but each soul goes through a lifetime review. And that review is like a lifelong movie that is every second of the individual lifetime, and not only the thoughts and the intentions and the feelings that the individual experienced, but the every emotion and thought of all the individuals that lifetime touched in every way. So someone who causes massive suffering, like an entire nation that is forced to live in poverty, for instance, or fear under a tyrant, the tyrant feels every emotion of all those lives, all of the suffering, all of the fear, all of the physical injuries. So that indeed, that self-examination that includes all of that is certainly what we could call hell. And really, we can't even imagine it.
Right. So basically, what we're doing here, that this is kind of like the concept of karma. We have to do our life review once we transition into spirit. So we're going to go back through, however brief or however long, the transgressions that we've committed against others. Is that like a simplified way of saying that?
It is indeed. Thank you, Lynn.
Well, I was just making sure I was understanding it correctly. Yeah, you know, I mean, and that's my, you know, to me, this is not hard to grasp. None of this is hard to, like I said, I just kind of flowed with this. But when my friend called me today, it reminded me that not everybody's there. She's really struggling with her religious upbringing. She's trying to take all of this very vast, very expansive information and shove it into this little religious container that she's got. And that was one of her questions. How do you, you know, how do you get out of that? So for you to have come from a different upbringing, I mean, you didn't, you know, you weren't waiting to start communicating with your son or channeling messages or anything of that. How do you open to that? Is there anything, does Matthew talk about how to really just let yourself move into that more expansive, connected state?
I think if we all could understand that religious teachings, regardless of what a denomination or overall umbrella religion in the case of Christianity, because there are so many churches, so many belief systems, sort of ranging from the fundamentalist up to the religious science, not Church of Scientology, but religious science, which is somewhat like the Unitarian Church. It does have a much more open mind about religion. They embrace spirituality as opposed to very strict dogmas. Really, we do need to open our minds and understand that the teachings, in some cases, are totally wrong. And I know from my own experience, this is very difficult to do. That orientation is so much a part of our lives. You know, in some cases, it's the total foundation of everything that we do. Every decision we make goes back to a religious teaching. The early church leaders were also the state leaders, and they were a very self-serving, greedy, power-hungry group. They wanted to control the masses, and the messengers who have come from God, who became Jesus is one, the Buddha. My lack of knowledge about other religions precludes my mentioning others, but they came with true messages from God, and the records of those that at one time were accurate, or at least, excuse me, please, close to accurate, as much as people could remember. The early records that did not serve the church leaders were destroyed and rewritten to put distance between the people and God, because that did not serve the purpose of those leaders. They wanted their own rules in there, and so they wrote them in. And it was pretty much creating a God-fearing populace. Because it was as if God is saying, obey me or I will punish you. And so ruling through fear and greed, because that's how tithing came about, because the tithing is to go directly to the church for whatever the church wants to spend that money on. That's not the concept. It is really do unto the least of these and you do unto me type thing. I mean, the Bible does have some things right, and the other holy books do too. But they have been so distorted that those false teachings are what the church leaders are teaching today without knowing that they are false. And truly, in our hearts, in our souls, just like you, Lynn, but you were so fortunate in having been a rebel, as you say, and understanding. Hey, you know, what I'm hearing is not the way it is. Some of us are so much slower in getting that. But it is so that we simply, many, many of us, are following church teachings because we feel this is how to be good. This is what is going to get me into heaven and everlasting life. Well, one thing there, you know, nirvana is another temporary lifetime. So the eternal life is the life of the soul, because each of us is a part of God.
So with there's so much in the news nowadays about, you know, like with same-sex marriages and, you know, all this dogma that surrounds, like, it's against the, you know, it's against the religion and God says it's a sin. And, you know, but how is that viewed? I mean, how is homosexuality viewed in Nirvana or from that position?
It's viewed correctly. At one time or another, every soul experiences homosexuality because it is actually an advanced state of spiritual growth, because it combines more than heterosexuality, the two energies, the feminine and the masculine energies, which have nothing to do with gender. They have nothing to do with sexual preferences. It has to do with the reconciliation of the two energies, which are so very, very different. Both have strengths, but feminine or goddess energy is much more gentle. It is more creative, more artistic, more nurturing. What we associate with the best of mothering, whereas masculine energy is more forceful. It wants what it wants and will stop at nothing, even ruthlessness, to reach its goal. It is the warrior spirit in the sense of warring, not the warrior spirit for light. And each soul embodies the capacity for both, and free will choices enter into that, but prior to birth in the soul contract, we do choose, among all the rest of the choices we make, is what comes through to our civilization's understanding as sexual preference. It isn't. It's innate in the soul at that point because it was the choice. And what I think is so important to understand is that not only does every one of us experience probably more than one, well, in fact, Matthew's just saying, yes, many more than one lifetimes reaching that point where we do have a homosexual physical experience, because it is an advanced stage of bringing together the balancing of the feminine and masculine energies.
I'm just kind of chuckling to myself because I live in the country and I know a lot of people that would be horrified to know that they incarnate. It's so funny. I'm going to make sure they listen to this.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, of course, that I never felt any bias a labeling of well, that person is gay, and so I sort of don't take that person into my closest circle. I never felt that way, but to find out that we all have many lifetimes to get to that point of spiritual evolution. You know, again, that goes against church teachings. So,
right. Yeah, I know. I wish everyone would, you know, would just be more giving and loving and accepting. That's the whole reason for this show. I mean, that's the whole purpose is to help people open their minds to that a little bit more.
Well, I'm so glad that you brought out both suicide and homosexuality, Lynn. It is so important for people to know, because the families and friends of people who have taken their own lives, it's so important that they know how tenderly those souls are treated in nirvana, and there is no condemnation. And then, of course, the homosexuality, so that there is no condemnation of them either. So thank you for bringing up those two very important aspects of a life.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Now, you know, Matthew has been talking with you for a long time. Does he is he continuing to do the same job? What does he do in Nirvana? What's his role now? Has it changed? I mean,
oh, indeed, indeed. He is not in Nirvana any longer. He about 11 years ago. Well, to go back just a bit, he started out because Nirvana is such an active, diverse place. I mean, it is absolutely overflowing with opportunities that are joyful and they're I mean, and I should have said that, I guess, right at the beginning when you asked me to explain Nirvana. But at any rate, he did start out in that soul transition, that huge, huge group whose mission is to greet the arriving souls and, you know, make them feel welcome. They're sort of the official greeters because family and friends who have moved on into spirit life are there too. So are pets. Any animals that we have been bonded with in love are there to greet us too. But at any rate, he started as a greeter, moved up to those very special groups who greet the souls who arrived with traumatized psyches and help in the healing of them. He rose through that, that mission that includes really millions of souls, because, you know, they do rotate to be the director or the manager. Or I know they don't give labels like that to it. But at any rate, it was time for him to move on and time for another soul to move into that top position. Matthew was offered three choices. One was to become a member of the 100-member Council of Nirvana, which really just sort of handles the administration. There is no bureaucracy involved. You know, there are no laws like we have. Nirvana just moves in the universal laws. That was one. The second was to reincarnate in a very highly evolved physical civilization. And the third was to accept invitations from other civilizations to evaluate their spirit worlds that are the equivalent of Earth's spirit world, Nirvana, and help them upgrade it. Because his reputation had rather become known. And that's what he chose. Matthew was such an adventuresome soul as my son that was such a natural for him to do. So for the last 11 years, he has been accepting these invitations throughout this galaxy and other galaxies. And he travels either astral travel as free spirit, no body, or in spacecraft, just because he enjoys that. And, you know, that's a different and fun experience. And some of his good friends are the commanders of those spacecraft. And when he gets to those civilizations, he manifests a body that fits in with theirs. So, you know, and I have to say that this is mind-boggling to me, even though he has said that I have had many other lifetimes that are in totally different bodies from what we consider human. He said, some of them are so much more beautiful, Mother, that you'd really be happy about those. Some are so different that you have never even imagined them. But as we progress physically, so does the beauty and the perfection of the bodies that are in those civilizations. Now, they may be, to our way of thinking, so totally weird that it was sort of like an ooh. But there is nothing ugly about them, like the kinds of bodies that we have seen in TV films and movies. Even though there may be a lot of truth in the higher aspects of those, the breakdown comes in the bodies that are really sort of grotesque.
Now, what is you know, with all this stuff about 2012 coming up and all the Earth shifts and stuff like that, you know, a lot of the information that I get and that I work with, it's really about us shifting into higher vibrations and higher density. I mean, less dense atmospheres and less dense living conditions. And I know that in some of his messages, he talks about the impacts of that on the body. Can you talk a little bit about these higher elevations, about these higher...
That's good.
and also address the impact that they have and that it's having on our bodies here in this time as we're getting all of this higher vibrational frequency beamed at us and given to us by these other places.
Earth had her planetary body. Earth is the soul, but her planetary body had spiraled down from where her soul stayed, because her soul is a much higher vibrational than the low third density, where she started an ascension pathway from lower third density, where darkness flourishes. And as she has been rising, and her capability to do this ascension is because light has been infused from powerful, distant sources of light to enable her to start the ascension pathway. And as she has been rising, all of her life forms have been given the opportunity to absorb the light, just as she has. And, you know, it's up to us as individuals to do that. But the purpose of the light is both for opening our minds and a higher level of spiritual awareness, and also to change our body's DNA or cellular structure from carbon-based to crystalline-based. The crystalline-based will enable us to go along with Earth in these physical bodies, into the higher and higher vibrations that Earth will be reaching on her way into the year 212 and beyond. So all of us who absorb the light are having our bodies changed. Our cellular level is changing. And this is producing a lot of anomalies, physically and emotionally. You know, everything from aches and pains to mood swings and, well, just I can't even think of all the physical things now, but everything from what we would consider perhaps mundane, from bloating of body cavities and maybe an occasional sense of dizziness, you know, what we would consider either a light symptom that just passes or maybe sticks with us. And in some cases, those certainly could be medical or, you know, physical anomalies that are actually symptoms of a medical condition that can be corrected. But they also can be simply the effects of our cellular structure changing into crystalline. And that is a good thing. Now, Matthew, when he has talked about this, he also has said, if those symptoms do continue, please consult a trusted healthcare professional to be sure that it isn't a medical condition that can be treated.
Right. But doesn't he specify, because I remember reading something about that, because I'm so energy sensitive that I have a lot of stuff go on with my body, and especially if I'm not careful. And when there's a lot of shifts on the earth, I'll get some stuff going on, and I have to, like, discern, is this me or is this the energy around me? But doesn't he recommend, like, more of alternative health care or a medical professional that's more open-minded?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes, Lynn. Thank you for mentioning that. Yes, he absolutely does. He mentions holistic practitioners or, you know, what we consider all alternative, and especially someone, and we can tell, you know, when we seek help in whatever field it is where we don't have that expertise, whether it's medical or legal or whatever, we either resonate with that or we do not. So if we don't resonate, that's a message from our souls, you know, don't persist with this. And if we do resonate, that's a message from our soul saying, yeah, this is what's good for you. So definitely he does recommend the open-mindedness of treating the entire body, mind, and spirit. So that, because that's what's going on. These are the changes that are happening to us. And they are all for the better. Now, things that we can do for ourselves, drinking plenty of pure water or other fluids, much, much more so than previously, because that helps the energy flow through our bodies. Energy tends to become blocked when we are stressed, whether it's stress from a job or stress from a cold or whatever it is, energy tends to be blocked. So drinking a lot of pure water is a definite help, and such a simple thing we can do to help ourselves. Changing our thoughts. If we don't feel good, we tend to start focusing on, oh, this hurts, and then maybe that brings in other thoughts that are concerns, maybe a bill that's unpaid, whatever it is. Though that adds negativity. If we change our thought to whatever it is that's positive, that makes us feel good, whatever it may be, maybe reading something that we know is interesting and fun, anything that will lift the spirit, that unblocks energy too. That brings light back into the system. And that's another thing we can do without consulting whoever our healthcare professional is. I'm sure there are more. And these have been mentioned in his messages. There are both a search feature where you just type in what your interest is, and also an index, a very comprehensive index on my site in the Matthew messages section, where Matthew treats these really quite extensively, much more so than I do,
right.
Than I just did.
Right. So, and I want to remind that the website is www.matthewbooks.com. And when you go on that initial page, if I'm remembering correctly, down at the bottom there's a link that's Matthew's messages. And then there is a really good like a whole search index thing where you can type in there, you know, like DNA changes, and it'll pull up all of the messages that address DNA changes. And the messages themselves at the beginning of them will have like a little summation, just a short paragraph that's not even really a paragraph, but just bullet words of telling you what's in the messages, which, you know, is just wonderful organization. Thank you very much for being so organized, Susie.
excuse me, please. That was a suggestion from someone else. I'm not going to take credit for it, Lynn, but it does make it easy for people to just the last messages are at the top and the key topics are right beneath it, and you can just scroll down and see what interests you most, and then you can just click on the date and pull up that message.
Yeah, and it is.
As well as the search feature and the index, which is a huge thing that a dear soul compiled for me, for the messages and the books.
Thank that person so very much, because I find it extremely helpful when I'm on this searching around. Now, you send out some stuff, puts a message out basically every month. If somebody wanted to be notified when those messages are out, what is the best way for them to go about that?
Joining the Yahoo group is the simplest way, because the messages are just automatically delivered to the inboxes. It's not an interactive group. It's simply that that same dear soul who formed that group for me, because that group alone is over 4,000. I don't have that facility. I don't have that time to do it, and I can't deal with that many people, on an individual basis, you know, receiving email address changes and things like that. So that is really the simplest way to do it. And then you just get the messages.
Okay. We have about 2 minutes remaining, but we have somebody that's been on the line that their hand just came up. So I'm opening up the line. The last four digits are 0933. Are you with us? Hello? Your area code is 610. Do you have a question for Susie or a comment?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hi, I'm Mel from Philly. How are you, Susan?
I'm fine, thank you, Mel. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening.
It's a pleasure, my first time calling. I just wanted to say I have been reading the Matthew messages for about 3 years, and I totally enjoy them. I totally enjoy them, and I'm just so happy to have listened in today. And you and Matthew are a joy and a pleasure to me.
Oh, thank you so much
You're
for saying
welcome.
That.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Blessings to you.
Thank you. To you as well, and you too, Linda.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Be well.
I love to hear from people, and he's been patiently on the line. He had his hand up, but then he put it down, so I thought he was just listening, and I'm glad he got it back up before our time was up. And we are down to the last minute, so I just want to really thank you so much. I can't believe we've been on the phone. You know, we've been on the show for an hour. It seems like, you know, 2 seconds ago I was.
Yes.
It's a joy to talk with you and hear all the exciting things that you talk with Matthew about.
Love is the key to everything, Lynn. Matthew has been asking me to say that. And so that, I guess, is our last words besides thank you so much. It was an honor to be with you and all your listeners today.
Well, thank you again, and I do hope that we will be able to work you into the show again at a time that's convenient for you, because I think there's so much more for you to share with us.
Oh, I would be happy to be. I'd love to join you again, Lynn.
Great. Thank you, Susie. And thank you all for joining us today on the Honoring Hour. I hope you'll join us again next week for our monthly meditation. Have a great week.